Welcome to Podcast 4 of GenTech, Teaching and Learning with Generative Technology. GenTech is a term we're using to describe tools that allow for student-created content. GenTech includes computer-based tools like iMovie or Windows Movie Maker, as well as Web 2.0 software like Writely, Impressor, or Gliffy. You can think of it as the alternative to traditional educational software in which students are tested against a correct answer or made to practice a single skill over and over, also called drill and kill software. This is a weekly conversation about a particular tool or trend and how it can be used educationally. And for each topic, we'll feature a definition, examples, and a roundtable discussion. Today we'll be talking about voice over IP, instant messaging, and things like Skype. And my name is Steve Whitaker. I'm at the University of Virginia.
And I'm Michael Kelly. I'm also at the University of Virginia.
Ah, but you're not right now, are you?
Well, no. In fact, I'm on the shores of Lake Orion up in Michigan.
Enjoying some cool weather as opposed to the 98 degrees we had yesterday.
Yes,
it's been
indeed.
It's kind of miserable here.
We're in the 70s and sunny and nice.
The third person that's usually with us, Mark Hofer, will not be joining us today. He has something else that he's working on right now, but will be rejoining us in the weeks to come. But today you have Michael and Steve with you. And like I said, let's talk about voice over IP and instant messaging, Skype, and so on. And I guess it makes sense to start with a definition of sorts. So I'll take a crack at that. When I'm thinking about voice over IP, let's start with that. Actually, let's start with instant messaging, if we could. I think that's the first of the two. To me, IM, or instant messaging, is sort of a generic term. But it is basically the synchronous equivalent of email. And by synchronous, I mean it's something that, you know, it happens in real time. Unlike email, where, Michael, you might send me an email, and it could take me a couple of days to actually find that I have it. Or it won't really take a couple of days. I'll probably know right away I'm sitting. But what it means is that there is time that elapses between the time that it was sent, received, and then responded to, right? Whereas instant messaging is a real-time connection between two or more people, and if Michael types a message out, it appears immediately on my machine. Now, I might not be there to see it, but if I do, I also have the option of responding to it immediately. And all of this happens inside just a small window on the computer. Good so far, I guess?
Yeah, I get it.
And I suppose one of the features of IMing is that you usually can send files, so I could transfer a file to Michael if I wanted to. What else?
Well, let me ask you this, Steve. Yes. Instant messaging, I think of, on telephones.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, I hadn't thought. Yeah, absolutely right. Like, the text messaging.
Right. Is that considered instant messaging? Or is that, because that's not an internet protocol, is it?
No, that's a good point. And I guess we should decide whether or not the protocol is the distinction to make. I suppose in some way it is. It is distinct because it's not over the internet necessarily. You know, at the same time, though, I think that text messaging happens in much the same way that IMing does. So although I've never really been very good at text messaging on the phone. My thumbs aren't that fast. Have you watched them do that?
No, I have.
Oh, my God.
One who only just got a cellular telephone just a couple of months ago. It's
right
over my head.
But I mean, go ahead.
Is there a difference between it's because text messaging, because doesn't that work sort of like the email? Doesn't it go to a box, or are they doing, is it real time on the telephones as well?
It's
a message and it's right to your inbox.
Yeah, there are distinctions to be made. I mean, a text message, an SMS message, can be written, and then it does go to an inbox of sorts. So you'll receive notification that there's a message for you that you can then write back. So that's more the parallel to email. But I know that phones and mobile devices also do have pure IMing software on them too.
Okay.
So you can, for example, text in real time with someone also on a telephone. So I'm glad you brought that distinction up, because I wasn't making that clear. There are synchronous and asynchronous versions of it for smaller devices also. But for me, I think, I'm focusing right now on that more synchronous IMing that has come to be visible in the popular media, and certainly it's a practice that I think almost everybody's using at this point. I'm trying to think if there are other features of IMing that we need to hit on. I guess a lot of it relies on shortening words, shorter versions of words, and abbreviations. The icons are a big part of it, I guess, the smiley faces and things like that. But I think, when I think of IMing, I also think of this sort of abbreviated pared down version of English where a lot of abbreviations are really taking the place of typing commonly used phrases like talk to you later becomes TTYL, got to go G2G. And I sound like, right. I sound like a fuddy-duddy just saying that right now. But so that's instant messaging. And as a few examples of some of the IMing software that are out there, I think America Online Instant Messenger or AIM is one of the big ones. There's iChat for Apple, and there are a bunch of web-based ones also. But I think those are probably the two big ones. Skype has an IMing feature built into it.
Yes, and we're using it right now.
We are using it right now. That's right. Skype, by the way, is what we use to facilitate this podcast. We're using Skype and then recording software. I'm sure we can talk about the setup at some future point, but Skype is what we're using. And that's IMing. And then there's the other side of it, which is voice over IP, which I suppose is just the audio equivalent of IMing. We're doing voice over IP right now, and all it really means is pushing someone's voice over the internet and delivering it in real time to someone or multiple other people. And Skype is a very good example of that. Skype's one that's really sort of taken the lead in doing voice over IP. You also hear the abbreviation VOIP or VoIP. And Skype is free. So too is iChat. iChat's also another free application. There are also companies now that are providing voice over IP telephony. So you can pay broadband providers like Verizon to give you phone service that is also delivered over the internet. And you've been seeing that a lot in the news recently because up until recently, they hadn't been compliant with local 911 regulations. If I had voice over IP telephone service, I couldn't dial 911 and have it work the way
That's
it was supposed
biggie.
To, which is a biggie, right? And, you know, one of the real questions is, well, if you can do it for free over the internet, why bother to have it put into your telephones at home? I suppose that's another conversation. One of the major other hallmarks of these applications is the idea that you're not opening yourself up to just anyone the way you might with a phone number, for example. So when I get my telephone service, I'm given a phone number, and anybody can call that until I decide to block specific callers. Unlike that, with voice over internet and instant messaging, the first thing you have to do is create a list of contacts that then have permission to contact you. And with all of these programs, with Skype, with AOL, IM, and with iChat, there's a list of contacts that you see on your computer. It shows who is online, who is not, and also a status, right?
Right, right.
And the status might say something like, call me, it might say available, it might say not available, or away. And there are a lot of different ways to sort of send this message that you are or are not available. It doesn't necessarily mean people will respect that and not call you. But by and large, I think if I see not available, I'm not about to intrude. If right. I see the away sign, I might give it a shot.
It might just not be, you know, working the machine.
Yeah, it could be sitting watching a DVD or something like that. When someone sends a message to you or calls you, you're first going to receive notification in most cases that you have a message. You can choose to accept or decline it. And then go from there. Skype works the same way. You'll be told that you're getting a voice call, and you can choose to take that call or to reject it.
So there's a good screening functionality for these things.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's going to be important when we talk a little bit in a few minutes about the educational side of it. But yeah, usually there is a screening mechanism. Not all of the IM programs do that. So if I'm using iChat, I'll just get the message from Michael, but I don't have to reply to it. He may or may not know that I've received that. So I think that's a pretty decent working definition, maybe. Anything we should add to it?
No, I think that'll get us going.
Okay.
Where have we seen it? Where do we use it?
I guess the first way to approach it is to talk about how it developed, and really briefly, you know, IMing came about as a way for people to just communicate quickly over the internet. It wasn't necessarily developed with business or education in mind, as is the case with most of these tools. And I know that IMing software has been around in one guise or another for a very long time, as related to the World Wide Web. It started in the early 90s along with everything else. You've typically seen it, I guess, in mass media as a way that, you know, the teens communicate over the internet. It's made its way into movies now. Businesses use voice over IP for business conference calls in a traditional sense. So instead of sitting around a telephone with a speakerphone, you can have multiple people in different offices doing communication, just like we do with a podcast. And it's certainly being used as a communication tool for businesses also. So, I mean, I think we've seen it that way. That's sort of how it came about. And, you know, what else is there, by the way?
Well, the instant messaging, you know, again, the the office. I use it a lot.
So do I.
Just to keep that real, you know, on the pulse, immediate contact, and it's really helpful.
And I find IMing a very attractive alternative to email. If I need a quick response and I don't really want to bother someone down the line in their email inbox, but if I can just shoot a really quick question to someone in the office and get that response back, I think it makes life easier for both people. Also, yes, it's absolutely. Also great for sending larger files. You and I have sent large files over Skype that couldn't have been emailed.
Mm-hmm. And it pushes it right through.
And it does. And in fact, at one point, I remember you being away at a conference and you needed something done, and you were smart enough to use, I think we used Skype for that, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. It was pretty exciting. I was in a group
doing
a presentation, and I couldn't be there for the presentation, so my group members were up presenting, and I was last minute, you know, pushing my video recorded segment of the presentation to them, and they got it and put it up on the screen, and I was in Florida, and they were watching me. It was pretty exciting. Because it was a big file, and it took a few minutes.
So there's a good use for it, which is to do something immediately when it needs to be done immediately, as opposed to trying to email and hoping that I might catch that, hoping I might have my email client open or something.
And it was way too big for email.
Right. I mean, if I remember, it was 15 or 20 meg, and it took a while to transfer, but it still worked.
It did.
So maybe we can talk about some possible educational uses and some of the things that are being done with voice over internet and IMing. And I'm going to throw out a couple of possible broad topics that this might apply, that might be useful in the classroom. And the first one that I see is just the idea of bridging geographical distance using IMing or Skype. So there's...
That's huge.
I think it is, yeah.
And I think it's huge, particularly in the area of language learning and opening up possibilities of, you know, authentic real-time communication outside of the classroom.
For example, with native language speakers?
With native language speakers, with you know, other people, other classrooms who are working on the same thing. Largely with native language speakers. That creates a lot more access by being able to go over the internet in this manner.
And I think that's an example of sort of maybe a subsection of this idea of bridging distance is that, you know, what you're talking about is really connecting to experts. So in that case, it's an expert language speaker. I also can imagine outside of the area of language classes using something like Skype to connect with content area experts that you might not otherwise get to talk to. So even if it's a local scientist who works in an office or a business person for an economics class or, To go to the extent of I've heard of people contacting college professors who are professors of history, talking about things that are happening in geography, for example. And then an idea that I had this week, I'd read an article about this dig that they're doing at Jamestown in Virginia, where they've excavated a well, and archaeologists have long used dry wells, you know, to learn a little bit about cultures, because typically they become the society's trash heaps. And there's a guy named Bill Kelso who's heading up the Jamestown Project. And I thought, wouldn't it be neat if a local high school teacher were to give him a quick Skype call and let him talk to a class for a few minutes about something that's happening locally. So there's this idea of connecting to experts on topics that are going on that you might not otherwise get to do, not necessarily as a replacement for the idea of an electronic field trip, but just a quick, short conversation with someone that otherwise students might not ever get a chance to talk with.
Well, that brings up the Electronic Emissary Project at William & Mary. Now, what I found interesting about that was that it's long-term. They establish relationships with mentors and do it over a long-term course of study. And again, you know, that's just a different way of your mission. But it enables that kind of interaction.
It does. I think the electronic emissary goes back a little while. It predates some of these synchronous tools, and I believe it's been online since sometime like 1992 or 1993 and been on the web probably for at least 10 years now. The idea with the emissary is that it's creating a database of content area experts that other people can then connect to, and it's a kind of telementoring. The address for that is, I think it's emissary.wm.edu, and we can put a link up to that. But you're right, it is this idea of creating this repository of experts who are willing to speak with people and help people out. And I think, as you mentioned, you know, calling somebody like William Kelso is an example of connecting to an expert in a sort of just a slightly different way. And you found a tool that does what the electronic emissary does, but for something like Skype.
Yes, Jive, J-Y-V-E. It's a plug-in, and the idea is to sort of networking Skype users.
Mm-hmm.
And I stumbled on it dealing with language resources and this voice over internet protocol with learning languages. And it's one of the main sections of this Jive is to how to connect language learners mm-hmm. from around the world using Skype. So, you know, it gets into the sort of the social networking a little bit, and it sets up a profile, but it's based on languages that you speak or are fluent in and languages that you'd like to learn. So when you see someone's profile up there, you see their sort of their languages and, you know, their sort of a ranking system and their status in Skype. And there's a whole broad range of functionalities, but it's an amazing way of finding people who have put themselves out there as, I am a speaker of English, and if you'd like to Skype me, you know, let's talk, and well, you can practice your English, and vice versa. I want to learn Hausa, let's say. I look for the Hausa speakers, and I can, you know, I can Skype them, and we can converse. And it's sort of, it's that informal grouping and organization.
Mm-hmm. In Skype itself, in the program Skype, there's a way to do a search, and what you can do is to put into this search feature as many specifics as you want. For example, you can search for anybody who is online, who is male, who speaks English. You can then further specify country and age and so on. And it sounds like Jive takes that kind of feature and expands it to things like areas of expertise, and particularly language. Is that right?
Yes, and there's also a, you know, business networking area, so you can, you know, kind of it's a little bit more focused. The thing about the in Skype search, you can find all the people who speak English who are in, you know, the Cayman Islands or wherever, but they're, you know, their purposes and what they're there for and what mm-hmm. they're looking for, you know, it's kind of wide open. Whereas in Jive, you know, you're in there and it's sort of a language orientation. So it breaks the ice a little bit. So if I Skype somebody a kind of a cold call mm-hmm. and, you know, say hi, you know, from Jive or, you know, how that works, it's sort of understood that, you know, you're there to kind of do language things.
Right.
So there's, it makes it a little easier, I think, in terms of,
It looks like language learning is the primary purpose of Jive. I mean, if you look across their navigation bar, that is the one content area that's specific that's featured in the navigation bar. But like you said, it looks like there are others too. Members and groups include things like money and investing, news and politics, religion and beliefs, schools and education.
Right.
So I've created a Skype account for the Gen Tech podcast. It might make sense to actually register.
Oh,
and
I'm looking
at you right now.
Hey.
You are listed under schools and education.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah, you go through a long, when you register, there's a long sort of profiling thing of interests.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't get into your zodiac and all that, you know, sort of social stuff, but it's very detailed in terms of your interests, and it's I was impressed.
It looks pretty neat, and we'll provide a link to this, of course, on the show notes, and maybe some more information about how you can contact the Gen Tech podcast through Skype. One of the things that I find interesting about Jive here is that in addition to basic profile information like name and age and location, there's also a little button that gives your current Skype location. Status. So it says online
status.
Or contact me, it's just yet another invitation to actually contact the people that are part of this.
Right, right.
So what a neat way to make some connections. I think Jive is a great way to bring in experts, but I'd also say Jive is an example of maybe the second major category of use, the first being connecting to experts. The second I see is just this idea of connecting to peers.
Yes.
So students can talk to other students, other people like themselves, either in other parts of the state or the country that they're in, or in other parts of the world to compare and contrast conditions, to hear descriptions of a different place. And I especially see that in as being topical in language again, and in maybe geography classes and history classes, government classes. So the social studies, the social sciences.
Sure. Can you imagine if in that area, just, you know, taking a current affair, something that's going on, and calling somebody there and say, okay, you know, what are you thinking? What are you seeing? What are you doing? What's going on right now? And have that real time, you know, right connection bond has got to be powerful.
It has to be. And it's probably taking the concept of pen pals, which is nothing new, and really updating it, making it a little bit more personal. And, you know, I'm doing a little bit of research on this. We'll post some articles, but there are articles about there how even the use of pen pals can promote mathematical thinking too. So
interesting.
So, and I, you know, I can't find much right now on formal studies on the use of things like Skype and IM to connect to peers, but there is research out there on pen pals. So if the analogy is apt, hopefully the carryover is going to be there, and these new tools will help even better some of the things that traditional ways of connecting with peers can help in the classroom. But you're right. I mean, what a powerful concept to be able to speak, to hear the voice, to ask questions in real time of someone, even just in another part of the country, but especially somewhere else in the world. Now, the time would be an issue for that in the class, I think. Yeah, time of day, you know, the time difference. But but there are ways you can work around that. If you're talking about somewhere like France where it's 5 or 6 hours, you can still catch someone at the beginning, someone at the end of the school day.
Right. Yes, we'll meet here at 12 midnight.
That's right. Yeah, we'll talk to you at 2 o'clock in the morning. And one of the things I'd like to put on the topic just for our discussion in a few minutes is the idea of how to capture some of the content of these conversations. So remind me to come back to that if I don't remember to. I kind of see, so that's the idea of bridging geographical distance. The other thing that I see these tools being really good for is just giving students what we've done traditionally, but in a new way of doing it. And I guess this pen pal analogy is a way of bringing that. Does that make sense? Using these tools as a new media for sort of traditional experience. For example, real-time commenting on something that's happening in a classroom. And this might be a little bit more appropriate for higher ed students. But the idea that if you have people logged in to somewhere like Skype, and they can actually ask questions in real time as a lecture's happening or as something's going on in the classroom, whether it's to the instructor or whether it's to teaching assistants. I'll provide a link to an article where Mark and I did some research with Dr. Mabel Kinsey at UVA on having our students do just that in a college class. And interestingly, they weren't as off topic as you might think all of the time. But the idea that students can ask these questions in a different way than they might be otherwise able to is kind of interesting to me. Coupled with the fact that usually you can create a document that keeps the history of all of the comments that have happened. In other words, you know, instead of sitting there with a voice recorder in the classroom, you can capture in text all of the comments that have been made along with hyperlinks and things like that.
Right, sort of creating kind of a back channel, so it's a richer experience, I think.
It is, and you know, what that might also enable, of course, is student-to-student conversation during a class, so it takes the idea of passing notes to a new level. But I'm not convinced that's always a bad thing.
Right.
So there's this idea of real-time commenting. There's also collaborative note-taking, which I think can be a very powerful tool for students. Whether it's through instant messaging, there are also, you know, something like Writely could be seen as a mechanism for taking notes collaboratively. And then there was an article that you linked to using Skype as an assessment tool, I think, right?
Yeah, I found that pretty interesting. A teacher had used Skype recording conversations, had her students recording conversations with native speakers in another part of the world. I think they were Spanish, American students talking to Spanish speakers in Guatemala or someplace. And the recordings were then posted and used as fodder for reflection and assessment, basically self-reflection, self-assessment, and the teacher would analyze it as well. So sort of the idea of, you know, videotaping yourself in the classroom or giving a presentation and, you know, stepping back and reviewing the tape. And these were, you know, live conversations that had been recorded and were used for assessment purposes. And it was, she met with some good results, you know.
So it's not necessarily a new concept, but I like the idea that it's got a, I guess as Mark might say, it's got a much lower overhead to get into and to do. And you've got this preserved so anybody can listen to it. You can post it over the internet. And that's a nice, I mean, audio files just by their nature, I think are a little bit easier to deal with than video files, at least traditionally. Now that YouTube or something like that is up there, that it might be a different ballgame. I wonder if good point. We can move into just sort of an open conversation for a few minutes. And here I've got a question that maybe we haven't addressed specifically yet, but we're calling this Gen Tech, and I'm wondering what the Gen is for this particular tech.
Is the generative nature of it?
Yeah, what is the generative nature of voice over IP and instant messaging?
Well, perhaps unlike some of the other tools that we're looking at, maybe the blogging tools or the things that are pretty clearly designed to, quote unquote, generate content or material and ideas. Maybe it's the it's more how we use this voice over internet IP, how we use Skype. So Skype, as an example, it's in and of itself is not necessarily particularly generative. It's, you know, communication, but how we as educators turn around and use it in that generative fashion or in a generative manner.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's not necessary. Like some of the other things that we've talked about, like maybe social networking last week, in and of itself, it may not be seen as a generative tool, but we can do some amazing things with this that really do allow for rich content creation. And I think as an example that you gave, the idea of recording conversations, you know, I imagine students could do their own journalism very simply with Skype.
Right.
And create some pretty powerful experiences for others to listen to. So it's not just creating something that you'll share with a teacher, but it's really creating a new media that can be shared with peers, with almost anyone to sort of share ideas.
Yeah, I mean, just think about, you know, the podcasting in the classroom, and we'll get into that in another session, I'm sure. But, you know, like you said, a student be able to make a phone call, interview somebody, got the recording, mix it into, you know, some intro, throw some music on it, and they're off they go.
And you're done. That's right. And in a very, very simple application, literally just record and post that file, even if it's not sophisticated, you know, it's... But right, the idea, I mean, it's so simple to add music. There are even online tools now for mixing audio. You don't need software on your machine to do that. So what a great and simple way for students to be able to go ahead.
And you know, Steve, that's, you know, the simplicity. That's, you know, that's it. What, you know, some of these things, if, especially if they're very real and authentic, just to have it down there, you know, raw, down and dirty, you know, it's great. You know?
And I like the idea that what you're talking about is, you know, you have to structure these assignments in a classroom in a way to make them doable but also authentic. So the idea is that you're not just turning students loose with a computer, Skype, and recorder. You're giving them some structure that they can follow, but giving them latitude within that to really be able to express themselves differently. So you might start with this idea of finding someone to interview. Maybe you do it through Jive. You sort of help students broker contacts first to make sure we're talking about safe, you know, use of the internet. But then from there, let them ask questions that might get to their own particular areas of interest. Let them structure this how they want to. And then like you're saying, you know, add in music, make it more personal.
Mm-hmm. And then it's ownership.
It's all about ownership and about creation. And I think that's such an important part, probably the important part of all of these generative tools that we're talking about. And at least for me, the reason I'm so excited, it's about student owning, you know, students owning what they're creating. One question I've got, and then, you know, I want to make sure you've got some too, is why, if all of this is so powerful, then why aren't we doing these things with just a telephone?
You mean logistics, I guess?
I don't know if that's the answer or not. It just seems like it wasn't one of those rhetorical sort of Socratic questions. We're talking about basically communicating with other people over the internet, but that can be done with a telephone also.
Well, the recording capacity, I think, is a big one. And the cost?
Yeah, I think the cost is probably one of the major issues that gets in the way of this up till now. And then the word that you said, which is logistics, it would have been my answer. You know, imagine trying to bring a telephone or a conference phone into a school where, first of all, you may or may not even have a line in your room. Second of all, how do you record it? Third, there's the issue of cost. Fourth, can you get a line out? It's all of these technical things that really kind of interfere with this. And maybe up to this point, we've seen the telephone as such a traditional communication means that and you can't cold call people, I guess, is the other side of that.
Right.
There's not an indexable database of people who have phone numbers around the world who don't mind if you just call them.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's what it is. It's this combination of indexes and the free nature of all of these things really make it simple.
And the numbers, you know, 'cause some, again, you know, you can sort of cold call people.
Mm-hmm.
More on a one-to-one and a smaller scale, I think, but when you're starting to involve, you know, larger numbers,
right?
It would just get to be too much.
I'd agree with that. And I guess really quickly before we wrap up, I do want to make sure we've talked about the ability to record audio, because I think that's a key ingredient in almost everything we've talked about, the idea that you're not just having these conversations, but preserving them. And I guess it has to be said that recording audio isn't the simplest thing to do all of the time with tools like Skype, but given the right software, it can be very easy.
Yeah, in fact, just this morning before we came on, I was running around, investigating, alternatives and different ways, and it can get kind of tricky.
Yeah.
But then again, there's software that's out there, and with the right tools, it can be done without too much of a challenge or a headache.
So just to throw it out there, I'm using, and I think you are too, Audio Hijack Pro, which is a piece of software available for the Mac that lets you record Skype, and I'm sure that there are PC equivalents. And in fact, if anybody who's listening to this knows of other software for Mac or PC that you can use to record Skype conversations, please let us know. Post us a comment or send us email.
I'm listening, and I know one.
Do tell.
In fact, I just downloaded it this morning, and I'm going to give it a try later. It's called FreeCorder.
FreeCorder?
And FreeCorder for the PC.
Okay. How's it working?
And it looks. I haven't installed it. I just as we were gearing up this morning, I downloaded it, paid a little money for it, and figured it would be worth a shot.
What's the cost on it?
$20.
Why is it called FreeCorder then?
That was my first question. there is a demo version that has a limit on time.
Okay. Okay.
I think it's free, as in once you install it and use it, it's like all your recording needs are just done.
Ah, so
free and easy.
Free in the freedom sense of the word.
Yes. Okay. Yes. But it looks pretty slick and an update forthcoming.
So what's on for next week?
Well, let's see. How about podcasting?
Podcasting, I think, makes perfect sense to this as a connection to what we've just talked about today.
Yeah, now the podcasting is a pretty rich, pretty deep well, I think.
It is.
I think we should probably split that up a little bit, but...
Okay.
Let's get into sort of maybe the mechanics and the sort of the how-tos of it next week.
That makes sense, and I think then from there we can carry the conversation over once we've gone into that about in the next show about generating student-produced shows and more detail about that.
Yeah, sounds good.
Sounds good to me too. Well, I've enjoyed the conversation.
Likewise.
And as always, we invite your feedback and your comments. You can email us, gentech@stevewhitaker.net. You can post comments on the blog. You can use the audio recorder that we have there to leave us voicemail. There are lots of ways to get in touch with us, so please do.
Please do.
And we will talk to you all next week.
Bye.
Bye.